welcome to the Fertility Conversations podcast. The goal of this podcast is to create more awareness about infertility and to provide support to people trying to conceive. Thank you for listening today, and we hope you will be encouraged. And now, here is your host, Ola.
Welcome to episode 8. Today I have with me a lovely guest, Yinka. She's married and lives here in Nigeria. She'll be speaking with about her experience with endometriosis and how it has impacted her fertility. You can also connect with her and follow her on Instagram at ninja_girls_journey_with_endo. Her details would also be in the episode summary. So I'm not a doctor, and neither is she, but we'll be speaking today based on experience and personal research. So welcome and thank you for joining us today, Yinka.
Hi, Ola. Nice to be here.
Hey, thanks. So to start off, please tell us a little bit about yourself. What do you do for fun?
My name is Yinka. I live in Lagos. I'm an HR professional, and for fun, I like to hang out, sometimes organize parties, and watch movies, and I found a new love for K-drama, so that's what I do.
For K-drama?
Yeah.
What's that?
K-drama.
What? Korean?
On Netflix. Korean, yeah. Korean drama on Netflix.
Never tried that. Maybe I'll check it out.
Yeah.
So today we're going to be speaking about endometriosis and its impact on fertility. So maybe just for some people that might be listening and not actually sure what that is, what is endometriosis?
Endometriosis is a disorder whereby a tissue in the female body, similar to the tissue in the uterus, is found in other places in the body aside from the uterus. So what happens is every month when women menstruate, they have those tissues forming in other parts of their bodies. And because there's no outlet, it just stays there. And then it turns to cysts, it's just there. Or sometimes it's just bleeding. So it just remains in the pelvic area. And over a period of time, it accumulates and then causes some trouble. So that's like a brief description of what endometriosis is. And it can be found in different parts of the body, not in the pelvic area, ovaries, fallopian tubes, but it can also be found in the intestine, lungs. People that they found it in different parts of the body. So it's not just the pelvic disease. And then some people have it inside their uterus and then it causes, but that is called something else.
Oh, I see. Okay. And how did you find out that you were dealing with it? So was there any signs? Or?
So there are symptoms related to endometriosis. There's the most common one is pain during menstruation, like severe pain during menstruation. Mm-hmm. Some people have it pre-menstruation, post-menstruation. Some people during ovulation. Then it also causes infertility, spotting, bloating, and also a lot of fatigue. So even when you can numb the pain, some patients are so fatigued and tired, it's really difficult to do anything else. But some people don't have any symptoms at all, but they still have endometriosis.
Okay.
And for me, my story is a long and interesting one. Mm-hmm. I started my period at about 13. And it was normal, 2 days, very light, and it wasn't even memorable at all. And as time went on, it became progressively heavier, more painful. And at the time when I was about 2012, when I still work, it became worse, like significantly more painful. And I just kept managing with painkillers, and after a while, I went to see a doctor. The doctor saw a cyst, but he saw the cyst, but he couldn't say this was the problem. So he just gave me drugs to fix all the symptoms. He gave me painkillers, multivitamins for what do they call it, to help with food. And he just basically gave me a lot of drugs. And then I continued managing it, but it didn't get better. So I went to see another doctor. This same doctor saw cysts, and then he felt, because it might be a couple of different things, he would give me birth control pills so I'm not ovulating month on month. So he gave me that, and I think he suspected endometriosis, but he didn't say anything about it. And then also the doctors felt, since I wasn't trying to have a baby and it was just pain, then I should manage the pain with painkillers. And then the myth of when you have a baby, things will be better. When you have a baby, it cures whatever's wrong with you. So I guess that was it. And I saw a couple other doctors when I was out of the country for work. I saw two different doctors, same story, painkillers and all. So after that period, I took the birth control for 1 year. And I had some horrible symptoms from the birth control. So after 1 year, I just stopped. And then by then, I was married. I was married, but I wasn't ready to have a baby. So I just stopped the the birth controls and continued and was still managing the pain. So I was starting to wait for 6 months, have fun, chill with my husband. And then after that, yes. I started trying. So this was by 2017, after 6 months, I started trying. For 6 months, nothing happened. And I'm like, okay. Also because of the painful periods and all, I decided to see a gynae. Even if on the internet, you're advised to go after 1 year.
Right.
So when I got to this, I went back to the gynae that gave me the birth control pills. And she did scans, tests. And I think at this point, the endometriosis was really... So he could almost tell from a scan, from a pelvic examination and from the scans and every other thing he said. And what he just did was just wrote endometriosis on a piece of paper and told me to go read about it, that I'll need a laparoscopy to confirm that it's endometriosis. And after that, I sought a second opinion. And then another hospital in Lagos, was the same thing, suspects endometriosis, laparoscopy, and yeah. So I think after the laparoscopy, it was confirmed that it was endometriosis.
Okay, so you did get the laparoscopy done to confirm the diagnosis?
Yes, because you can't really diagnose it without the laparoscopy. When they do that, they get out the tissue and then they test it, and then they can say for certain what it is.
I see. Wow. So earlier you mentioned that one of the doctors gave you vitamin C for food. What does that have to do with endometriosis?
No, it gave me multivites for appetite. Yes.
Oh, for appetite.
So
okay.
It was for appetite. So when I was on my period, I had no appetite for food.
Oh.
Even till today, I can go 3 days without food because I just won't feel like eating.
When you're in your period?
Pain, so, yeah.
Oh,
so
wow.
It's a combination of symptoms that are very hard to describe. But the short and long of it is, before I had the laparoscopy, I could, by like 2012, 2013, I couldn't go to work when I was on my period. And if I went to work, I would just go to the office and end up in the clinic. But
wow.
I really couldn't do much. Yeah, so.
This was on a monthly basis.
Wow. Yes.
I remember in high school, we used to have some girls that had a lot of pain each month during their periods. Does pain automatically mean you have endometriosis,
I think the short answer to that is no. Doesn't necessarily mean you have endometriosis. I think some people, when they have fibroids and they're big, they also have pain and they bleed a lot. So it doesn't necessarily mean it's endometriosis. But you know, I also mentioned that there are people that have endometriosis and do not have pain. So I think I'll just say that there are four stages.
Okay.
And the stages are done based on how far it has spread.
So for how far the endometriosis has spread?
Endometriosis has spread, yes.
Okay.
So depending on the number of organs you have it on or how far spread it is. So there's some people that have stage one on just one organ, but they have so much more pain than someone that has a stage four, that it has spread all across the person's organ. So it's just very confusing and interesting, and you can't say for certain this is what it like. This is not a one-size-fits-all for everyone.
Right. Which obviously also makes it very hard to diagnose. And like you said, you do need to get a laparoscopy done or a surgery done to actually ensure that's what you have.
Yes.
And is there any treatment? Like, has your doctors told you there's any way to treat it?
So currently, there's definitely no treatment. It can be managed. People have different schools of thoughts on how to manage it. So in terms of diagnosis and treatment, it's still the laparoscopic surgery, but there are two types. There's one that is the excision surgery, and that's the gold standard treatment. And then there is the ablation. The difference between the two of them is the excision surgery, they pull out the tissue from the roots. And then it takes it out from the roots. The ablation, they just burn off, they can see on the surface. And what most gynecologists know how to do and what they usually do is the ablation surgery. So a lot of people just get that done and then it just comes back. There are people I've heard who had surgery this month and then by the next month it's worse.
Wow.
So I don't know if I can call that treatment. Yeah.
Yeah.
The other treatment options that doctors talk about is so there's this drug called Zoladex, or in some countries it's Lupron.
Mm-hmm.
So it puts you in menopause. So of course you're not, so there's artificial menopause.
Yeah.
And what it does is it just quietens your system. You don't ovulate. You don't have a period. Nothing is going on there. And that is just so extra tissues don't grow and everything is just calm. But the problem is once you're off that, it just continues. So you hear a lot of doctors advocate for those drugs, but a lot of patients also say this thing doesn't work. So I think that's the phase everyone is in. And for me, I took Zoladex for 6 months immediately after surgery. My doctor recommended it. And then it has a side effect too. It's a very strong drug. So it causes hot flushes. For some people, weight gain, brain fog. And then it also can cause damage to the bones. It makes your bones softer. So what they do is they give you another drug to counter that. So when I took it, I added like 5 to 10 kg. Like it was so depressing. it wasn't funny at all. But people just generally see it as masking the problem, not solving.
Yeah. And so, especially when you're trying to fix something and then other things come up. I am actually aware of Zoladex. I didn't know that you can use for endometriosis, but I know it's used sometimes during IVF because one doctor used it for me at some point. So,
but you know, the interesting thing is I've gone back to my doctor to say, Aisha, I shouldn't just take this thing for another 6 months because
the Zoladex?
As much as it is, as much as it's just masking the problem, at least it's peaceful. Like, you don't get the pain, you don't get the period, but you also can't use it for more. It's not recommended for more than 6 months, so you can't perpetually use it.
Right. Yeah, because it is putting you in artificial menopause, like you said. So I'm not sure how long that can be good. Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
So for now, no cure, but there are ways to manage it.
Yes, not sure, but there are ways to manage it. And another way to manage it is through diet.
So
there's schools of thought that different food causes different things. Mm-hmm. So there's some types of food that cause inflammation. So you should stay away from the things that cause inflammation, things that can, would I say, that will feed the tissue in your body. So the tissues that are growing, there's some types of food that will feed it and that will make it react or grow more. So there are a couple of things. There are different versions of the endo diet, but diet also helps, but it definitely doesn't cure. It doesn't cure.
Okay, so if you take foods that don't cause inflammation, then that can help. So it's like milk and stuff like that? Is that?
Yes, so milk, sugar,
yeah, gluten, sugar.
Like everything we eat in
milk. Everything that's good and tasty, pretty much. Oh, wow. Okay, so in terms, I mean, you said a lot here about people finding out they actually have endometriosis. But in terms of awareness, how do you think there's enough awareness about this with our young and even young girls and maybe even young adults and maybe even adults in general? Because, I mean, I know the name, I've heard of it before, and I just kind of associated with, oh, if someone has painful periods, that's probably what they have, that's it. I wasn't really aware of anything else.
So in terms of awareness, I would say there isn't enough awareness.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't know about it. A lot of people just know the name. They don't know the details.
Yeah.
And the awareness is growing now. There are platforms where people talk about it. March every year is Endometriosis Awareness Month. So there's also some awareness all over the world about it. And I think, of course, with a lot of things, it will grow. Awareness will grow over time, but right now it's not a lot. Then if I'm speaking about Nigeria as a country, the awareness is like much lower in Nigeria. Also because people don't like to talk about things that are not positive or illnesses and things like that. So the awareness, and then also because of the stigma. So the awareness is not a lot. But I know there are a couple of people who are talking and who are doing things about it. There's a foundation I know about, Endometriosis Survivors. Okay. They have a website, they have conferences, they have a WhatsApp group that I'm part of, and of course, social media handles, and they just create awareness in their own way. And they also go to secondary schools to tell young girls about it. But so that is what I know is happening in Lagos. Amongst the medical professionals, I think now they are getting to know about it, but they're not. I don't see them as very interested in learning more and basically trying to solve the problem. You know, I talked about two types of surgeries, and
right.
I do believe that in Nigeria, nobody does excision surgery. So,
do they need to go travel out of Nigeria?
Yes, they have to. Or at least I don't know any doctor as at today.
Not as of now, right? Okay. Well, if there is a doctor out there and someone knows about it, then perhaps they can share that information on with us on Instagram. It would be actually really good to know. So people that
would be helpful.
That would be exactly. So people that do that for now, people that get the endometriosis treated, the option they have in Nigeria in terms of what's available is to have the tissues burned, you said, the surface.
Yes.
Right.
But when you're having the surgery, they're not going to tell you that. They'll just say it's a laparoscopy, would investigate to see what's happening and we'll try to treat. But as you learn more about it, you realize that there are different methods. And I think that was exactly what happened to me. At the time of surgery, I knew nothing about the types of surgery. Although I saw it somewhere, I asked my doctor, but he just bridge and but later you realize that there are different options.
I see. Okay. All right. And I'm glad to hear about the foundation that you said they have in the Endo Survivors, you said, in Nigeria?
Yes, Endo Survivors. Yes.
Okay. That's wonderful. And the fact that they also go to high schools and speak with students in Nigeria, that helps at least let them know to if they're having any of the symptoms to go to a doctor and get proper checks done. Okay. So how have you found support during this whole journey of, in terms of endometriosis, has there been a lot of support? I mean, do you have a lot of friends that actually have the same condition, or is most of your support online?
No. So I don't have a lot of friends, but there's a lot of support online. Right. There are so many people that talk about their experiences. Mm-hmm. Some have their success stories where they have either, they're learning to manage it better. If they were affected by infertility, they have their babies now. And I think there's a lot of resources online, which is very helpful. And okay. Also, the people who talk online, when you ask them questions, they're also very helpful. Okay. For example, there was a time I was going on holiday to the US, and I reached out to one of the people that live in the US to ask, who was your doctor, or who mm-hmm. helped you with your diagnosis, surgery, and everything. And they were very happy. She was very happy to recommend, to tell me what to do, who to call. So there's a lot of support online, I would say, definitely.
Oh, that's lovely. Yeah, that's really good. That definitely helps. Now, you talked about it just a little bit now when you mentioned something about fertility. I wonder, how does endometriosis actually impact fertility, apart from the pain and the fact mm-hmm. that what does it actually do?
Okay, so, you know, when I was describing it earlier, I talked about the fact that there's tissue in your pelvic area that has nowhere to go, so it's just hanging around there.
Right.
So this, a lot of times, the tissue over months, years, it attaches to different organs. So when it attaches to the ovaries, they become cysts, and then they impact the quality of your eggs. They attach to the fallopian tubes and block the tubes in one way or the other. I think it just disrupts the entire system in different ways. I think for me, the way I understand it is the way it impacts me, and that is egg quality and fallopian tubes. But I guess there are other ways in which it impacts people's fertility. And also, when you have the laparoscopy, when they take out the cyst and all the growth, of course, if you're tampering with something close to the ovary, you probably take out some of the eggs.
Right.
So you see a lot of women with endometriosis with very low AMH and low egg reserve. So their reserve is already compromised because of the surgery, because of everything that's been happening there for years. So I think that's how it impacts fertility.
Okay, so endometriosis impacts the egg quality and can also block tubes in some cases. I know you mentioned AMH. For those that don't know, that's a blood test that can also check what your egg reserve is.
Yeah.
Wow. It's great that you're putting awareness to this, because obviously with all the things that endometriosis does or could potentially cause, it's something that should have way much more awareness. People need to really focus on this and find how to better manage and treat this. And also, of course, for egg quality, because I mean, there are probably many young girls, young adults that are dealing with this, and there might be options for them to maybe even freeze their eggs early, right? If their eggs have been impacted over the years, and not waiting until they might be in the late 20s or early 30s or whatever time it might be at the time they actually, because you know, most of your doctors, like you were saying, well, don't worry about it now because you're not trying to have children. But in reality, you should actually be worrying about it even before you have children, right? Because if it's around your ovaries and it's impacting the eggs, well, you're not doing anything about it then. You're waiting till potentially much later. It might be much worse then.
But the issue is not everyone with pain has endometriosis. So you also don't want to get
not everyone. Not everyone what?
With painful periods.
Oh, right, of course.
Endometriosis. So you also don't want to get people panicked. You also, I just always hope for the best. And I don't know that that is the right answer. And I think a cure would actually be really good, because you know you can catch it early, cure it early, and everyone is good.
Yeah. Okay, that's great. I mean, awareness is great anyway. Let people know about it. If you suspect you have some symptoms, visit your doctor, and then they can do the proper checks to confirm if that's what you have or if that's not what it is. And then if that's what you have, they can let you know your options, and at least it's very important for people to be aware. And then they can decide how to proceed and what options they want to explore. Thank you so much for that, Yinka. That was really informative. So in terms of how endometriosis has impacted you, it has obviously in different ways. But in terms of infertility, has it changed you, who you are now?
I think even if you go through infertility for 6 months, it will change you because it is so, it will just shock your entire system because nobody grows up expecting it. Nobody thinks, this will be me. Everyone feels like, it will be somebody else. So for me, it has really impacted my life. It has changed the way I see a lot of things. In terms of, it has made me like a more empathetic person. I think previously, since I didn't have any health issues, I just didn't understand what health issues were. But I think it has opened my eyes to that, and it has just made me more empathetic and a kinder person. Just understanding that everyone has their struggles and their battles, especially when you have to explain such a long story to someone, and then you realize that this is your own story, you know, and every other person's story is different. So I'll definitely say it has made me kinder and more empathetic, and I think stronger, because when you don't have a choice, you have to be strong through it all, through fertility treatment, through the eyes of the public, through comments. Yes. Like, you just have to be strong through it all. So I think it has strengthened me and also strengthened my resolve in God, because, you know, there's no cure, there's nothing. So you have to hold on to something. So it has really strengthened my resolve in God. So
that's good to know. And so where are you now in your journey?
In my journey, so I'll just say previously, I've done so well. I've gotten diagnosed. I've done a couple of fertility treatments, two IVF. And this year, 2020 in particular, I've just decided to just rest and just chill. So I'll say in my journey, I'm just chilling, taking it easy, and just hoping for the best. Also trying to get my body well ready for fertility, trying to eat healthier.
That's nice.
Take some supplements.
So no sugar?
At least sugar, I'm trying to reduce it, but just trying to do the best I can. But in terms of fertility, I'm not, even before COVID, I had no plans of doing anything extra. I was just trying to rest and just take a deep breath this year. So that's where I am in my journey.
That's good. Rest is definitely good. So knowing what you know now, what will you tell your younger self?
So I'll tell my younger self to embrace healthier options.
Yes, no sugar.
So you know, I said, so of course there's no cure. It couldn't have been prevented. So I think it would just be in terms of food, in terms of exercise. And I'd love to tell my younger self to cultivate all these habits earlier because you need it in the future. So I think that's it, because I can't think of anything else that would have made a difference.
Are there any words of encouragement for other people perhaps dealing with endometriosis and if it's impacted their fertility?
I think I'll say three things. The first is, if you are experiencing symptoms that seem abnormal, you should seek medical attention, and you should seek medical attention because you don't know what it is and what help you can get. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of times people just sit at home and just hope for the best. Yeah. Or I think one thing that helped me, even at least when reflecting, was that when I started to feel very uncomfortable, I had HMO and I saw, like, I kept going to different doctors. So I think it's important to see a doctor when you feel uncomfortable, when you have abnormal symptoms, when you're not sure. See a doctor. And also, if you've been trying to have a baby for 6 months, 1 year, depending on your age, also by all means see a medical professional. And also, when going through, if you're currently going through infertility, what I would say is, I'd advise you to be open. There are different routes and different options. You know, some people are still, aside from the cost of IVF, they're still very anti-IVF. But I think people should be open because there are different ways. Everyone's path is different. If you're open to IVF, to IUIs, to taking just some fertility drugs, to adoption, surrogacy, egg donation, embryo adoption. And so I think there are different options and you should be open-minded. I know it's not easy in this culture, in our environment.
No, it's not.
It's important to be open-minded. And the last thing I'll say is, while you're doing all of this, ensure you live your best life. You know, at some point earlier in my journey, someone said that a woman kind of defines the way a home is. I think it's important to just keep living your best life, to try to have fun when you're not doing all these treatments and things. Try to, if you can afford it, see places, travel, hang out with people, and just continue living your life. Even in terms of your career, continue to pursue your career. Don't put everything on hold because of infertility. Yeah, I think that's what I'll say.
Well, so that's wonderful advice, because again, many of us just, you know, focus totally on the fertility and trying to have a baby, that sometimes we ignore people around us, we ignore the career, and we just focus, and we just sometimes, of course, it's a very stressful journey, so it definitely impacts a lot. But like you said, try as much as possible to live your best life, even while on the journey of trying to have a baby. And a very good point as well, and people being open to see, explore all the options that are available to them, and then decide on which one they would like to proceed with. So thank you so much, Yinka. Talking with you has been so informative. Now I know so much more about endometriosis, and I'm sure our listeners also know much more. And if you suspect that you might have, definitely visit a doctor. Let them get the right investigations done, and to be able to properly diagnose if that's what you have or if it's something else. So thank you for such an enlightening session. Again, if you do want to connect with Yinka, she's available on Instagram, very active, on at Naija_girls_journey_with_endo. Her details would also be in the show notes. So if you do want to connect with her in the future, you're able to do that. Thank you so much for Yinka, and do have a great afternoon.
All right, thank you.
Thanks for joining us this week on the Fertility Conversations podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a 5-star rating and subscribe. Follow us on Instagram at Fertility Conversations. If there are any topics you would like to have discussed, please send an email to fertilityconversations@gmail.com. Be sure to tune in next week for our next episode. Thank you again for listening. Take care of yourself and do stay hopeful.